Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. Of course, if you're out there across America, why, we ordinarily would welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please don't call in until we ask for calls, because we have a very, very special guest this evening, Joyce Riley, who is a talk show host, does 3 hours every morning, and actually does 3 hours. Our programs are rebroadcast opposite this across America in the evening. But Joyce does a wonderful job of getting information out about what's really going on behind the scenes. And we are both on Telstar 5 satellite, and you can listen to Joyce there 5 hours a day on Telstar 5, and of course you can listen to Radio Liberty 9 hours a day on Telstar 5, and Radio Liberty 9 hours a day, and we're just trying to educate people as to what's going on. Well, Joyce actually was a nurse. She a cardiac nurse. She was a flight nurse. She's had a fascinating life and career. But for some years, she's been doing talk radio. Certainly, she and her husband did everything they could to try to make people understand the Gulf War illness was a very real illness. And then, of course, more recently, the depleted uranium problem, which affected not only our soldiers during the first Gulf War, but is crippling many of them today. And if you have not yet seen the DVD that they've done on depleted uranium, you need to see it. At least a third of the young men coming back from the Iraq and Afghan war today, a third of them within 3 months of returning home are ill. Now, I'm not saying all of them are related to depleted uranium, but many of them are. The government knows that, and they call it post-traumatic stress or something else, because they cannot admit what we are doing to our own soldiers. And if the American people understood, in fact, if the military understood that the greatest danger to our soldiers is not the enemy in Iraq, it is the people who are exposing them to depleted uranium, it would be an entirely different situation in the Middle East today. Well, that is the background. Joyce Riley, thank you so very much for being with us. Joyce, are you there? Oh, there we are. Okay, Joyce, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure as usual.
You just go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, I would just want to bring everybody up to date with what we're hearing from the military now, and that is that post-traumatic stress, which is not what you would probably label as a real post-traumatic stress disorder, is being experienced by so many of the military right now. That many of the units are compromised in their functioning while they're in Iraq. It has gotten so bad now that they are placing them on the SSRI drugs while they are fighting a war. Now, this is something that I find so unbelievable because, as I understand it, if they have taken certain of these drugs prior to joining the military, they're not allowed. But they will place them on the drugs while they're in combat.
Now, these are drugs like Prozac, Luvox, things of that sort.
This correct.
Selective serotonin reabsorption inhibitors. Go ahead.
That's correct. And they are not drugs that you would normally want to put somebody on because they can actually create more violence and more of a trigger finger than the average person. And it's pretty frightening, I think that they are being placed on these drugs in a battlefield condition where the danger of friendly fire or shooting each other is so great. But with that, Prozac, Zoloft, Luvox, Butrimine, whatever it is that they choose to use at the time, or even what I find most dangerous combinations of those, I think is putting an artificial situation in there that is even more deadly than we could have ever imagined.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, go right ahead, Joyce. And you were just commenting how they're actually using these selective serotonin reabsorption inhibitors on our troops. So many are having emotional problems in this impossible situation we placed them in there fighting in Afghanistan and in Iraq. So go ahead.
And then they bring them home, of course, and when they go to the VA and they are continuing to have problems, they don't see psychiatrists. Now, that's the part that a lot of people don't understand, is that they see some kind of psychiatric assistant or perhaps a physician's assistant, or even more often it is a psychological intern that they see who gives them a test and says, yeah, you've got PTSD. Well, post-traumatic stress disorder really came about after the Vietnam War, though they had it even prior to that time, as you're well aware. And it was a convenient label so that any time somebody had something they didn't want to identify, they could call it PTSD. And we know from talking to people like Dr. Doug Rocky, who's been on your show, that radiation poisoning causes neurological changes. And those neurological changes that we're seeing are evident in massive headaches, depression, inability to control their temper. The Air Force Times and the Army Times is just replete every month with the stories of military people who have killed other military people here in the States, military people who've killed their wives, killed their children, and it is getting to be an epidemic proportion in the military. It's off the scale. I had one person that was an MP, military policeman in the active duty military, who told me that it is so great now that it's off the scale of anything they've ever seen in domestic violence. And we're talking about murders. We're not just talking about somebody, you know, making a domestic violence move, a minor move. I mean, not that anything is minor, but we're talking about homicides. And the children are the ones that are taking the brunt of all of this, I do believe. Well, as a result of that and the failure to diagnose appropriately with depleted uranium poisoning or any of the other environmental assaults that they receive, then there's just one step left, and that is, we'll medicate them and let them just go away. Well, it doesn't go away. The problem doesn't go away, but the troop does. And, of course, the VA, you know, whenever they have a problem, they just yell, we don't have enough money and we don't have enough manpower. That's always their excuse. You know, whether it's a computer that's stolen, you know, at some, I don't know where they would have it stolen, but, you know, the computer stolen, or whether it's we can't treat these troops at the VA hospital, or we can't see any new patients, it's always because
we
don't have
enough
money.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is talking about the plight of the servicemen when they come home. I mean, there's so many of them. Remember, we've rotated, you know, almost a million men through the battle zones here in the last six years, and so many of them are ill, probably 300,000, maybe more than that. The Veterans Administration facilities, they just don't have the facilities, they don't have the ability to treat them, and they're not treating the right issue. I mean, they're just saying, oh, well, it's all in their head. We'll call it post-traumatic stress because we don't really want them or anybody else to know about the depleted uranium and the danger of depleted uranium, and that we poison our own soldiers, so we'll call it post-traumatic stress and give them a pill, and maybe we'll give them a little disability, and then we'll just write them off like they were expendable. Go ahead.
And the sad part is that they do have problems that are going to get worse and worse. They are getting worse and worse, and the VA is absolutely intent on not addressing these things. Now, if the VA does not admit to it, or if the VA, if the Pentagon does not admit to the problem, such as DU or Gulf War illness, then the VA does not have to treat for it. And that's legally how they get away with it, by saying, well, it doesn't exist, therefore we can't treat for something that doesn't exist. Now, during the first Gulf War after 91, I became amazed, just shocked, when I went to the Houston VA hospital to talk to the administrator about the treatment of Gulf War veterans there. It was probably around 94, 95, and I was visiting him and asking how many Gulf War veterans they had in the hospital, and he said, we have only four. And I said, well, what's the max that you've had here? And he said, four. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, we only have 4 beds for Gulf War veterans at any time. Now, you recall they had a Persian Gulf registry, and they were trying to evaluate Gulf War veterans. Well, they really didn't. What they had was a screening program to find out how much the veterans knew about what happened in the first Gulf War. In other words, do you have any evidence that biologicals or chemicals were used? Do you have any documentation that would support that fact? Where was it? What happened? Did people die at the time? It was really a fact-finding mission to find out who knew what. And then, of course, they would get a visit with suits from Washington that would say, we need those original documents back so we can help the other veterans. Well, all these troops were willing to help, and a lot of them turned over the information. And we're talking about the massive Fox vehicles at the time. Fox vehicles were the ones that would print out a paper. They would go to the scene of an incident, a chemical incident, print out a paper of a statement of what was in the area at the time. Well, those were the reports that the DOD wanted to get back, and they wanted to keep them to themselves. They didn't want any evidence out there showing that biologicals and chemicals were used in the Persian Gulf.
Now, you're talking about the first Persian Gulf War, where repeatedly we were told none of our troops were exposed to poison gas. Absolutely none. You can trust us, well, maybe 1,000, maybe 5,000, maybe 50,000, maybe 100,000, but no. Well, yes, we just don't know how we managed to miss that, and that's because we blow up the bunkers where they had the poison gas stored. Saddam had it stored at Kamenchi and many other sites. Why would you blow up bunkers that were filled with poison gas? That doesn't make any sense.
That's right.
Unless they were trying to cover up something, and they were trying to cover up the fact that much of this had been produced in the United States.
And we did a documentary at the time. I don't know if you remember. It was called Gulf War Illness, Fact or Fiction.
Right.
The first one that we did, and the Department of Defense called me personally, and I think I may have talked about that recently in your program in December.
You go right ahead and talk about it again.
Well, they contacted me, a Navy Captain Chalker Brown, and I will tell you, it is scathing. The evidence on Gulf War Illness, Fact or Fiction, from the standpoint of all of it having been correct, nothing has been disproven, we started giving it out to Gulf War veterans, that they would just call me, and I was living in Houston at the time, or write me a letter, I would send them a copy at no charge. Well, I got this call from the Department of Defense one day in Houston, and they said to me, we would like for you to stop distributing Gulf War Illness Fact or Fiction. And I said, well, what part of it is inaccurate? And he said, well, that's not it. You are one of us, and we don't want it distributed. Of course, he was referring to my having been a captain in the inactive reserve, had worked out of Kelly Air Force Base in Texas. Well, his concern was that it not get out, period, because it did contain damning evidence regarding the Department of Defense's failure to treat these troops, failure to diagnose them properly, and failure to admit to the fact that biologicals and chemicals were used. Well, at the time, I said to him, no, sir, if you consider me part of the people that are going to cover up this story and allow our military to die, I said, don't consider me part of you. And I will continue to distribute this until somebody tells me that it is inaccurate or disproves it. So we continue to do that. Well, the reason I'm mentioning that is because we are just getting ready to have that on DVD now. And we decided that it is time to reintroduce that documentation and evidence back to the public so they can get a whole picture of what took place with the sale of biologicals to Iraq and all the things that you're talking about here. We don't have it quite ready yet, but we're going to have it on DVD. Now, in there...
So as soon as you have it, please send me a copy. We'll carry that here for our listeners as well, because I think it's so important that they understand what happened back there, after the first Gulf War, and the organized lies that were told to the American public and to our servicemen at that time. And people don't understand. They just hung Saddam Hussein, at least we're told that he was hung. We don't really know anything about what happened, but the significant thing is that what people don't like to understand is that our government gave Saddam Hussein or sold him the material that he used to build his chemical weapons and his biological weapons, and they gave him over $5 billion, which we're writing off now. We financed Saddam Hussein, but nobody wants to talk about that.
No, they don't. And I had a very special lady whose husband was a Superior Court judge in California write a letter, because she had heard me on Art Bell. She wrote a letter to the Secretary of Defense and on her husband's stationery, sort of, you know, and got a response immediately, which I certainly can't. But anyway, she asked the question, did the Department of Defense, or with the acknowledgement of the Department of Defense, did the U.S. provide Saddam Hussein with biological and chemical agents and weapons in the 1980 time frame? She got back a letter that I couldn't believe from the Assistant Secretary of Defense, stating that, to our knowledge, we don't have any evidence that this happened. Well, she's such a smart lady. She got the evidence that I had, which is on this new DVD, or not old DVD, Gulf War Illness Fact or Fiction. And she took that evidence and she sent it to the Assistant Secretary of Defense, which came from the Senate hearing 103-900, and said, sir, let me refresh your memory. Perhaps this information might help you. And she literally got back a letter stating, oh, thank you very much. You have, you know, sort of, we appreciate that information. Yes, it appears that we did sell these weapons to Saddam Hussein. So, you know, they will do whatever they can to keep people from knowing this. Now, there is a document that not very many people have. It's called Gulf War Syndrome, the Case for Multiple Origin Mixed Chemical Biotoxin Warfare-Related Disorders. Now, this was a staff report to Senator Don Riegel back in 1993. Now, that's real close after the ending of the war in 91, in which this was a report only for internal use. I got a copy of it, and I've made copies of it. But listen to this. In it, on page 5, it states the following. Now, this is a report for, this is a staff report to Senator Don Riegel. It says, chemical warfare agents which survived the Allied bombing or were inventoried and returned to the Mathana facility for destruction include the following. Listen to this list. 13,155 millimeter artillery shells that were loaded with mustard gas. 13,000 of those shells, 6,200 rockets loaded with nerve agents, 800 nerve agent aerial bombs, 28 Scud warheads loaded with sarin, 75 tons of the nerve agent sarin, 60 to 70 tons of nerve agent tabin, and 250 tons of mustard gas. Now, that wasn't all of it, but that went to the Mathana area in Iraq and was later destroyed. As we know, the Kamisiyah area that you were referring to earlier had thousands and thousands of gallons of weapons, of gallons of agents there, as well as crates and crates of ammunition that was destroyed. It was about the size of 100 Walmart. That's how big it was that was destroyed at that time at Kamisiyah. And in this DVD, you will see the picture of Kamisiyah where they are destroying those weapons, and as they go inside the bunkers, you can actually see that they have that they were made in the USA, the UK, and transshipped through Jordan into Iraq. But I bring this up because the very fact that they had all of these weapons left over, obviously Saddam didn't have that for window dressing over there. And then they move into the issue of the biotoxins and the chemical nerve agents, which they found and admit to. So this is a really important document that I treasure an awful lot, and thank the person that leaked it to me. But the idea, though, that they would suppress diagnoses or suppress the illnesses of these troops goes back a long, long way. There was a book written called Waiting for an Army to Die. And that was written after the Vietnam War, and now we think in terms of all the armies that were waiting to die, or all the armies that have died and all the troops that have died from, we know, the atomic veterans on forward, and what a tragedy it is. And I'll give you the latest on the Italian troops' depleted uranium issue, which is killing them from the first Gulf War.
And, of course, we know about the Agent Orange in Vietnam, and they lied about it, and they lied about it, and they lied about it. And only during the Clinton administration, of all things, did the Clinton administration say everybody who's poisoned with Agent Orange should be treated, and at least they got some compensation, those who were still alive at the time. If you can't trust the people in government, who can you trust? And, well, we'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead, Joyce.
And so we now are thinking of, or some people are thinking of sending their sons and daughters over there to fight a war in which they literally lied from atomic veterans on. And those were the atomic veterans that were told to stand and watch the atomic blast. And, oh, it'll be just fine. We'll just brush this off of you with a broom and everything will be fine. Then when they got sick and they had to form children, of course, it was all either PTSD or, gee, you just, you know, it was in your genes or, you know, total lack of acknowledgement of these troops' problems. So we've all been sacrificial lambs almost in the military and subjects to the proprietary pharmaceutical company's experiments. And one of the worst places for those experiments are places where you go through boot camp, because that's where they do some of the initial testing for some of the vaccines, which everybody that's gone through boot camp can remember when somebody passed out, got sick, or the whole entire barracks got sick after receiving vaccines. But to go back what you were saying, why would we be trusting a Pentagon that would do that? If they lie about all of those things, then why do we send our people into that slaughter? And I have to say that, you know, from the time that we did Beyond Treason, which is literally all of the experiments done, and I know you carry Beyond Treason, and I thank you for doing that, and I thank you for helping people to see that, because it has kept so many troops, or so many kids from high school, from joining the military. And for that, you know, it's not that I don't want them to join. I want them to be educated if they make that decision to join. So the issue of sending and arming Saddam Hussein, sending him into Kuwait, or knowing that he was going to go into Kuwait, allowing him to do so, and then killing and maiming hundreds of thousands of innocent people for no reason, is kind of what happens. Gulf War I, Gulf War II, Afghanistan. And I just wanted to give you some sort of updates of information. There's an ex-cop who has two sons that have died in Iraq, or one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. And, of course, they name him Texan of the Year now, give them awards when they've suffered. You know, it's always the awards that go to those who have suffered, died, are gone, can't get the medals, you know, that kind of thing. But when you think of a gentleman like Roy Velez, and he's a regional bank manager or branch manager for a medical equipment company in Lubbock, I have so much respect for him, but he doesn't even know, I don't think, what is going on over there. And here he is, you know, a grieving father that is very proud of what his sons did, and rightly, I can understand that. But the losses that these people are having, two sons, not one, but two. And, you know, we don't hear those kinds of stories very much because, you know, that is really a deterrent for a lot of people to join. And then we move on to the other issue, which is this draft situation. And I wanted to tell you sort of the way that the Air Force Times and the Army Times are handling the story by saying that the U.S. government is, here's the headline, "Don't panic, it's only a test." I'm going to tell you something that they didn't tell us in the news media. When I covered the story originally, I never found out how long this test is going to last. The draft test. Did you happen to read that anywhere, Dr. Stan?
No, I didn't.
You know, that was by design, I think, because the U.S. government, of course, now plans to test this selective service system in the event that it needs to reinstate the draft. Well, here's what they didn't tell us, and that was that officials announced that the test would not occur until 2009.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is simply talking about the fact that they are planning on reinstating the draft. Why? Well, in my estimation, it's because we're going to war with Iran and Syria and really, of course, the whole Muslim world, and that's really what is in the offing. The average American court says that's impossible because the president doesn't have the support of the people. But you see, it doesn't really matter. The people who rule America have their agenda, and they've got to have more cannon fodder for this. And so they are having a trial of the draft. And really, what's going on today now? Where are they going to be having this new trial of the draft and see how it works?
Well, we don't know where it's going to be held. I think it's going to be the real deal, though. I don't think it's going to be just a test. They're going to implement it, they say, in 2009, but I think that's going to be the real draft, and I think probably they're going to find out that they're going to have to do it early. What is interesting is that in 2004, only 11% of the people that responded to a Military Times poll thought that the U.S. should start drafting men into the military. And obviously, nobody is for this. So at the time that that occurs, I think we're probably going to be seeing the most massive response by the American public that we've ever had.
But you know, right now, Joyce, they're forcing the people who are in the National Guard, and they're forcing the people in the reserve, you know, who never volunteered to go overseas to fight. The people in the National Guard signed up to guard America, and after they've been overseas for 2 years, now they're told, well, you're going to have to stay on, you know, we need you, you know, it's a patriotic thing to do. Even after their term of enlistment is up, they're still keeping them there. In other words, you signed the contract, you joined for 4 years or 6 years, and at the end of 4 or 6 years, they say, sorry, you can't get out. We've changed the rules, but after all, it's for the good of the country. So we have an involuntary draft already with the National Guard and many of our reserve troops, and they're being held against their will, forced to continue going back into the meat grinder.
Well, they just passed a new law that says that people in the Guard and Reserve can now be held to the same commitment of time as the active duty. That's my understanding of reading it, which means that, and I just want to talk about this for just a second because you have to understand how this disrupts a reservist's life. I was a reservist, and I know, and every, for instance, when you're a nurse or a physician or a professional, and I can only speak for those that I was aware of, you have to have, when you have an AFSC or an Air Force Classification Code or a Military Occupation Code, MOS, you have to have another job. In other words, you can't just go in the reserves and fly 2 weekends a month. You can't just go down to Kelly Air Force Base and fly 2 weekends a month in a C-130 as a flight nurse and expect to stay current. You have to have a regular job. Well, physicians have to have a practice. And so, of course, as you are aware, when a physician is called up to duty, and if there's anything such as a sole proprietor left, you really cannot get somebody to take over your practice, and many of those practices are lost. They're gone. They're supposed to be gone for maybe 4 to 6 months. Well, usually 3 months is the time period, 3 months, and then sometimes they're kept for 6 months. Well, now they're kept for a year, 2 years, 3 years. There is no practice when they come back. You know, they have to start all over again. And I know that many of the positions are no longer held for military people when they're in the reserves. So you come back to pretty much nothing. That's one of the problems now, is that when they do return home, they cannot be employed. They have some kind of physical problem as a result of serving, and they're just out on the street, which brings us to the issue of homelessness, which is so incredibly huge right now, and the fact that half of all the homeless are veterans, which, you know, if there were any other occupation that half of all the, let's say if half of all the homeless were from Ireland, you know, or some, pick anything, then you'd begin to wonder, wait a minute, what's wrong with, you know, what is going on in that group of people? Well, if they're homeless, we just say, oh, well, they're homeless, that's it, and too bad. Well, these people are going through this loss of income now because they come back, return to nothing. And after you have been gone for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, as some of them have now, and you came home only on a 2 week leave of absence, and each time you created a child during that time you came home, you may not have seen your children for 2 years. And that, it destroys families. And that's one of the problems they're having in the military now. They come home to nothing, and they're distraught, they're sick, and they have no one to take care of them, and they become homeless.
Well, it's a tragic, tragic situation. I mean, the average individual doesn't understand that at least 30% of the returning veterans are ill within 3 months of their return. But we don't talk about that. We talk about those who died, those who had lost arms and legs and blinded, but we don't talk about the hundreds of thousands of the veterans of this war who are ill. Isn't that amazing? How could you cover that up in a free society? We'll be right back with Joyce Riley. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Joyce Riley, and Joyce, go right ahead.
You know, we were talking about the draft a few minutes ago, which is going to take place. I am almost convinced because the Air Force Times has been addressing it for so long. Not one of those if kinds of situations, but when. And also, I heard on Fox News, and I think I relayed this in December, that on Fox News they said, how will your stock portfolio be affected by the draft? You know, no ifs, ands, or buts, but how will it be affected? And so we're thinking in terms of they can't get enough military. They're going to have, they're taking NATO forces, of course. NATO is the largest group of forces in Afghanistan now.
But yeah, but about half of those are American forces assigned to NATO. So we have, you know, we have the American forces fighting, and then we have the American forces assigned to NATO fighting. Of course, there are other soldiers there, but so many of the countries in Europe, they want to get their soldiers out of there. They don't believe in this. They figure we shouldn't have been there in the first place, and I fear before long it's going to be America fighting there alone.
Well, you're absolutely right. I was talking to a retired veteran or a very sick veteran who's been fighting Gulf War illness from the U.K. He called me a couple of days ago, and he said that in the U.K. now they are pulling out, Tony Blair is pulling out, all but about, as I understand, I mean, we're a little fuzzy on the figures, but somewhere around all but about 1,000 of the troops over there. So the U.K. has pulled out most of their troops, but this has been done very quietly. People are not aware of this. It is being done covertly because they don't want America to know that even the U.K. is now saying, I don't think so. And I asked this troop about Tony Blair. He said, it's over for Tony Blair. It is really over. There is no respect for him. People are done with the war. They're fed up, and they want their troops home. Now, let me just ask you, and I do this, Dr. Stan, because I want to prove a point that the media doesn't tell us what we need to know, because you're very well-read, and you would know it if it was there. But do you know what the next greatest troop company is, a force that's a country that has sent troops to the Iraq War after the U.K.?
No, I don't.
South Korea. South Korea, of all things. I mean, I was shocked when I heard that. And I think they only have about 700 troops. So we have this huge coalition force that is not a coalition force. You know, you have, you're down to the point now of, you know, I don't know, I'm making an example of Mauritius, you know, with 42 people that they've sent and, you know, all these smaller countries that we're calling that a force, and it's not.
Hold that. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joyce Riley, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Joyce Riley from the Power Hour. And before we go on with our discussion, Joyce, I want you to get your website out, your telephone number. Tell people what they can get if they get in contact with you, because Joyce has such great material and great information and DVDs on this whole issue of the first Gulf War and now, of course, the current war that we're in, and people have to understand. I mean, if their sons or grandsons or siblings are going to be going off to fight in this war, you have to understand that you have no control over the experiments they're going to do on you, your exposure to depleted uranium, the fact that they're not telling the American people the truth about not only the danger of dying and being injured, but of the other medical problems that certainly involve the people of the first Gulf War, and now with increasing frequency, the victims of the second Gulf War. Go ahead.
Well, I thank you very much. The website that I'd like for the military people to go to, or anybody who wants to see what the military is thinking, go to GulfWarVets.com, GulfWarVets.com. There's a bulletin board there. And if you want to know what's happening to our troops that are returning, you can go and look at that bulletin board. You don't have to be a member, and you don't have to post. But you just pull up the bulletin board, and you can read what they're saying about what happened over there. And many of them are commenting on the fact that they were involved in killing innocent people and many of the suicides that have occurred as a result of their returning home have been because they can't live with the idea that they killed innocent children. One gentleman was talking about the a child that they were told to shoot because he might have a bomb strapped to him. Now, can you imagine being in that position of having to face that And maybe you have a three-year-old yourself, and that little three-year-old comes running out because he's hungry or wants some water or whatever, and you're told to shoot him, kill anything that moves. Now, that's what we're going to be dealing with. We're going to have hair trigger people coming home who are so sorry for what they have done, finding out that this was a war that didn't need to be fought, innocent people that didn't need to be killed, and now they have been responsible for it.
But Joyce, you know, when you're in battle, when you're trying to save your own troops, and lots of times in every war, you're going to kill a lot of civilians. You can't help it because you never know who the enemy really is. It happened in Vietnam. It's happened in every war. That war is hell. Wars is all about killing people and destroying things. And our leaders take it so lightly, and the average American takes it lightly. And our troops are over there frightened to death. You know, that child might have a bomb on them. You don't know. And you've got to kill him. Because it may be either him or you, or the rest of the people in your squad or platoon. This is what people don't understand, that, as General Sherman said, war is hell. It's brutality. There's no way to make it any different.
That's right. And I am just very grateful that I have never been in that position of having to do that or make those decisions for other people also. But you know, when we were talking about the draft a few minutes ago, it is such an oxymoron that we can't get enough troops, we can't get enough troops. And then in the Air Force Times, they just ran the story, January 15, that there are not enough captains and majors that are voluntarily leaving the military. You've probably heard of a rift in the forces, the reduction in forces. Many military people know that term. And they're being told that if enough captains and majors don't leave and take the pay incentives to voluntarily leave the military, they're now going to be kicking out 1,400 captains out of the Air Force. Now, this is at a time when we can't get enough people. Now, granted, you have to have the right mix of the right people, but you would think that you would want to keep the ones that you could have in there, change their MOS, move them into other areas. And also, at the same time, they said that the line officers and the chaplains, 99 colonels and lieutenant colonels, are going to be forced out of the military just because there's too many colonels. Well, you know, there's always such a thing as reduction in rank also, which has been done when they move them into another MOS, and they pay them the same. But there are all kinds of alternatives, but I'm so surprised when there's this continuous forcing of people out of the military. Now, what I wonder is this not what Senator Wellstone, when he was alive, told us about in 1995, that they were trying to get the military out simply because they didn't want those that had been exposed during the Gulf War to become ill while they were on active duty. So places like Fort Riley in Kansas opened up one day, literally, and said anybody who wants to get out can get out today. Well, you know, there's a lot of people that are fed up and say, I'm done, I'm out of here, and they'll go. Then they can't be followed, and they can always say, well, we only have so many people sick from whatever reason, not Gulf War illness, because, of course, that doesn't exist. But what they're really saying is that are still on active duty that are sick. And Senator Wellstone said that by 1995, now I was on a conference call with his office one day, and he said by 1995, that's only 4 years after the war, about 90%, between 80 and 90% of all the military that served in Iraq was gone in the first Gulf War.
I mean, they departed from the military.
Correct. They were departed from the military. Now, that's an incredible figure, an absolutely unbelievable that we lost between 80 and 90% of our military after the first Gulf War by 1995. Now, think about that, what that means. That means that they were promoting below the zone, trying to get people up to rank, because they had to have so many colonels, so many generals, so many whatever. And so they started promoting them, and that's why on many of the news broadcasts, you see a colonel who looks like he ought to be a captain, who is so young, so fresh-faced, and that's the reason why, is they had to promote below the zone to get them up to rank. So, but at the same time, they're picking up groups of people and trying to get them out of the military, which just amazes me. And also, at the same time, you know, that I wanted to move into the story of the leadership change that's taken place in the military with the reshuffling that's happening at CENTCOM and the Pacific Fleet. These sweeping changes that the DOD had are really significant. They say that it's part of a shakeup in the Bush administration, but I think what it really is, Dr. Stan, is it's part of a move to get those out of the military that are not cooperating with what is the changes that are being made. And so, of course, we have Gates now, who is the head of the Department of Defense. And I do understand that Donald Rumsfeld does have a number of lawsuits against him, civilian lawsuits against him for the Guantanamo incident, and his life is kept pretty busy just with that issue, which I could not be happier to hear, I have to say that. But this shakeup now of putting Robert Gates in there is really, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Well, that's what we have here with Robert Gates, who is complicit totally. He was part of the, as you all know, Iran-Contra. He knows full well of the transfer of biologicals and chemicals to Iraq and all those sort of things that the Department of Defense was doing at the time, and he just barely escaped being found guilty of a lot of crimes that were related to Iran-Contra. Well, Gates nominated General George Casey to become the 36th Army Chief of Staff, and he's been at the helm. Remember this, that his famous contribution, General Casey's, was that he was at the head of the multinational forces of Iraq since mid-2004 when that army was started. And remember, that was the army that was started, and they sent everybody home with their weapons, kicked them all out at the time of the military, then started a new Iraqi army, and then can't figure out where all these weapons and insurgents are coming from, the alleged insurgents, which I believe are a lot more than that. But Casey really botched the Iraqi army issue. I mean, that multinational force has been a disaster. So what do? They promote him into the 36th Army Chief of Staff. And then Gates went on to tap the Naval Admiral William Fallon. His name is Fox Fallon, Chief of the U.S. Pacific Command, as the next commander of Central Command, which has routinely been, of course, Army. And the question has been raised as to why would you put a Navy person into dealing with the ground forces? Well, and I know that I heard on your program recently, the gentleman from Utah who does a newsletter. Oh, I can't.
Joel Skousen?
Yeah, Joel Skousen. And boy, I tell you, I was just hanging on every word that Joel Skousen said on that program when he was talking about the changes that were being made and the fact that the U.S. government has no desire to want to win this war, and they're doing everything to find excuses and say, oh, well, we'll try this thing, and I'm sure this will work, just bear with us. And he did a very good program, and I commend him. But this guy, Fallon, who is now chief of the U.S. Pacific Command, now is commander of Central Command, is obviously because if the United States decides to do its airstrikes or naval ship strikes, essentially from attacks from a ship in the Middle East, then they need somebody who's a naval commander there. And
of course, as you know, we have we will have very, very shortly two carrier task forces in the Persian Gulf, and at least one military attack force. This is the Boxer. It's we're a Marine force, ships loaded with Marines, all set to go ashore. And of course, they're setting another one now, whether that's going to rotate the Boxer home, or they're going to have a lot more Marines there, so that when we go to war with Iran, why, we can have lots of Marines on the shore getting slaughtered. I mean, we're taking over 600 Patriot missiles. Why are we taking 600 Patriot missiles over to Iraq? I mean, you can't use those against the insurgents. Those are to be used against incoming missiles. Well, they do not, certainly the insurgents don't have missiles. Who over there would have missiles that they would be firing at us? It's very obvious. We're going to war with Iran, but they can't tell the American people that. All they need is a Persian Gulf incident, maybe like the Gulf of Tonkin incident that didn't occur. And, of course, 58,000 Americans, boys, died because of the Gulf of Tonkin incident that didn't occur. Well, we have a Persian Gulf incident coming down the line. I think people have to really begin to analyze what's going on and understand that there really are people who have a different worldview, and they want to expand the war in the Middle East. But go ahead, Joyce.
Oh, boy, do they. And, of course, we can even talk about Somalia in just a second also. But, you know, the Pentagon also announced the retirement of General Peter Shoemaker. And he had been chief of staff of since 2003. And he was 4 years on the job. And what was interesting with Shoemaker is that Rumsfeld called him out of retirement. He was a career special operations officer, brought him out of retirement to serve as the Army's top uniform officer early in the Iraq War. And, of course, he directed a lot of big changes in the way soldiers train and fight, but I really think that he's leaving because of a disagreement with the administration also. So we've got General Abizaid leaving, and he is, of course, a military graduate and one of the few people that was fluent in Arabic. Then we've got General George Casey, which I think is going to be probably leaving also, and, you know, that was in charge of the multinational forces in Iraq. General Fallon, who is going to be there for, I'm sure, a long time while this next war goes. And then we've got Lieutenant General David Petraeus. By the way, he is a military academy graduate also, and he became commanding general of the Army Combined Arms Center. He was at Fort Leavenworth before he took over this position. And I have some real questions about General Petraeus. And then, of course, you've got Shoemaker, who's going to be leaving, and so there's big, these are huge transitions in the military. I mean, these are not small changes. And so you've got a lot of them leaving, and I do think that they know full well the depleted uranium problems over there, and they're trying to move people around, shift them around, get them out of there. And I think a lot of them are demanding that they leave also. The Italian troops, by the way, let me go back to the first Gulf War, and I apologize for shifting back and forth, but I wanted to address the Italian troops and the depleted uranium issue. Italian soldiers are now dying following exposure to DU, and the BBC is actually reporting this. The troops who served during the wars in the 1990s that believe that their cancer came from depleted uranium. It says that, of course, we know that the U.S. says it fired around 40,000 DU rounds in the Bosnian and Kosovo conflict, but the Italians are now saying that 50 veterans have died and another 200 are seriously ill. It is because they believe with the depleted uranium. And also in Italy now, the children with disabilities, they have an association because there's so many of these children with deformities. It's called Anavafaf. Anavafaf, it's a strange name. But those who have died or ill or contracted cancer and then have had children that were born deformed. There also is an excessive number of Hodgkin's disease among the Italian Balkan peacekeepers. So you've got all the Balkan soldiers plus the Gulf War I and now the Gulf War II. And I think if we were to see how much illness, mortality and morbidity has been caused as a result of depleted uranium, I don't think any of us could believe that. I think we would just be absolutely shocked at how much cancer and Hodgkin's disease, lymphomas, leukemias have been caused as a result of that.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. When we had Doug Rocky on last time, Major Rocky, he was telling me that over 80,000 veterans of the first Gulf War were dead. And I challenged him on this subject. I said, where can we verify that? He gave me the reference to the Veterans Administration records, and I followed it through, went to the Veterans Administration, pulled down the report, and according to them, of the 695,000 we had, we sent over, why, of course, it's presumed that 80,000 of them are dead. Those are the Veterans Administration figures, not my figures. Anybody wants to verify that, why, we'll be glad to provide the information. But you're never going to read that. Now, remember, we're talking about, 16 years after the Gulf War, the first Gulf War ended. These were young, healthy people. You do not lose that many people, you know, young, healthy people, you know, in 16 years. Something terrible happened to them.
Yes, and you know the interesting thing, Dr. Stan, and I do hope people will get that from you, and support you in what you're doing here, because this is an incredible amount of information that you're not going to get from anyplace else to find out what is really taking place within the military and to know the to even know how many people died as a result of the first Gulf War. That 80,000 is a huge figure. I know Dr. Nicholson always said 30,000, and that was about 5 years ago.
Right. Well, these are current. These are figures just within the last 6 months.
Huge number. Huge number of people. And well, we have to stop this abuse of our people and educate them before they join the military. Otherwise, they're going to end up in the same fashion.
Well, I think our job is to bring the information to the public, and the public has to challenge us, get the information. Go to Joyce's website. What's that that website once again, Joyce?
GulfWarVets.com and BeyondTreason.com.
GulfWarVeterans.com, BeyondTreason.com. And we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, let me just tell you the latest thing on the PTSD front is that now they're saying that PTSD is causing heart disease. Now, how they make this leap, I was shocked. You know, I was a cardiovascular nurse, and for them to be able to try and take the leap of, oh, they're so upset and they are so distraught that they're causing their heart to stop, was just a little bit much for me to accept. And I will tell you this, that in the first Gulf War, heart disease was rampant in 23 and 25-year-old troops. I talked to a number of them, and they had arrhythmias, or their heart rates were irregular to the point where some of them would actually go up to 180 and drop down to 60. Well, a lot of this comes from the environmental exposures that they had because of side effects of, you know, from whatever it was, whether it was the biologicals or chemicals, or now it's depleted uranium. But to now, they're putting out this story in the Air Force Times that, well, you know, thinking badly or thinking sad or being depressed is causing heart disease. Now, you might think that it might over a long period of time affect their lifestyle changes, but this is amazing that the Department of Defense is doing this early. But be that as it may, everybody needs to understand that the military is used as cannon fodder. Now, I love being a flight nurse more than anything I have done, probably. I mean, it was a real high, an experience I'll never forget. But I didn't know what it was all about. I do now. I am not trying to keep people from joining the military. I'm trying to get them educated to know what to expect, that when you take those vaccines, know that they may be experimental. If you want to be an experimental guinea pig, that is your choice. But I do believe that every person needs to know before they join the military that they're, that as in the report that you have there, Senate Report 103-97 says that hundreds of thousands of our military have been experimented upon without their knowledge or consent. That needs to stop. And so with respect to these returning troops, I want everyone to be aware that there are going to be challenges. And when they say they're sick, they are probably sick, because there's nothing that you gain out of being of saying that you're sick to the Veterans Affairs Department, because there's not a whole lot of compensation for you. The issue is we need to get them some kind of treatment outside the Veterans Administration. And I thank you, Dr. Stan, for having this information. I encourage everybody to get Beyond Treason from you. If you don't believe what I'm saying, the CD-ROM on there has all the evidence you need. Thousands of pages of documents. There's a DVD.
Hey, we're out of time. God bless. Good
Thank
night.
You.
Joyce. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Joyce. She's put together an amazing DVD. It's actually one DVD and then a CD with thousands of pages of government documents about the dangers of depleted uranium. It's called Beyond Treason. It's a DVD, a touching, powerful, one of the most powerful DVDs I've ever seen. And then, of course, the CD with all of the government documentation on it. The documentation they don't want you, or of course, our soldiers, our fighting men to see. And then, of course, we carry a book called, written by Seymour Hersh, Beyond, let's see, Against All Enemies. It's a little book. Seymour Hersh wrote it, dealing with the Gulf War illness, dealing with the first Gulf War, dealing with the fact that we supplied the chemical and biological weapons to the wicked Saddam Hussein, and we also poisoned our own soldiers. So you'll certainly want to get the book by Seymour Hersh, which we refer to, Against All Enemies. We have a four-tape set on depleted uranium. In fact, we have two four-tape sets on depleted uranium. We actually have a book called Vaccine A. It goes into the experimental vaccine that was given to hundreds of thousands of the young men when they first got to the Gulf War site. We even have a four-tape set on this. And this really is an incredible experiment. They've lied about it. And already 80,000 of those troops are dead. Now, they cannot admit that they experiment on our boys. We actually have a government report. It's called the Rockefeller Committee Report. Came out from the Senate Veterans Affairs Commission. I tried to get the woman who wrote this to come on my program. She was frankly afraid to do it, frightened to death. But she did have the courage to put out an excellent report. So again, you can order the Rockefeller Committee Report. It's inexpensive. Senate report. They only made up 35 copies for an entire nation of 300 million people. I talked to the people in the printing office, and I said, why did you only make up 35 copies? And the fellow said, oh, they're just so expensive to make up. We actually print them here on our printer, but you know, they are available through Radio Liberty, the Rockefeller Report, Vaccine A, our four tape sets on depleted uranium, then, of course, the Beyond Treason DVD from Joyce, and it's an excellent, excellent DVD, but the documents are there, and that's the one thing about Joyce, her documents are valid. And if you want that material from the Veterans Administration, we'll send you the pages out of that report, pointing out that 80,000 of the young, healthy veterans of the first Gulf War, as of a few months ago, were now no longer with us. How could that happen and you're not hearing about it on through the media? Why? Because the media is controlled. Five major corporations control the media and determine what you hear, what you read, and what you see. That's covered in a book we have called The New Media Monopoly. Now, you can get all of these items by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, and remember, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet, on the America News Network radio station, the Genesis Network, or the Radio Liberty Network, but I suggest you go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, where you can get at least 3 hours of our programs, either live or archived or on MP3, and encourage others to listen. We're also heard on shortwave 4 hours a day at 5.755 megahertz. That's for both afternoon and evening program, 5.755 megahertz. You can also hear Joyce and I on Telstar 5. And if you want information on how to get to an expensive satellite system, why, give us a call. 1-800-544-8927. America is going to war with Iran. That's what it's all about. Doesn't matter that the American people don't want it. Doesn't matter that the legislature or elected representatives don't want it. The people who control our government are intent upon expanding the war. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. Pray for Radio Liberty. But pray that I'm wrong. Pray that we do not get into an expanded war with the entire Muslim world. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests, and for this hour we're going to have with us Barry Samus. And if I were to describe Barry, I would call him a Jewish patriot. And he loves his country. He loves Israel. He's fought a lone battle for many years trying to make the people of Israel understand that they're being betrayed by their leaders. He talks extensively, and he writes about, a sect of Judaism known as the Sabbateans, which is basically, in my estimation, a satanic organization that is actually using Israel and intends to destroy Israel and tied into labor Zionism. It's a fascinating story, and he'll tell you how to get some of the books on this. And most people have never heard of the Sabbateans, but they're real. They're a very real organization. They've existed in the past, and I'm sure they continue to exist today, and they interlock with what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, a very real force in the world that is intent upon plunging the entire world into chaos. Well, Barry is going to be telling us today about what's going on there in the Near East. As you well know, if you're following what's going on, the president or premier, Olmert, of Israel is now being investigated for crimes that he committed before he went into office. Olmert is betraying Israel. They've simply taken recently down some 40 checkpoints that were being used to stop terrorists from coming into Israel. They've just disbanded those checkpoints to make it easier for the suicide bombers to get in. What madness is that? Israel is giving something like $100 million to the Fatah, which is, of course, part of the Palestinian resistance that hates Israel and is one of these days is going to be attacking Israel. So why is Israel financing an organization that's dedicated to its destruction? The United States is working with Egypt to build up their helicopter force so it could be used in the coming war against Israel. We've recently refurbished the howitzers for Egyptians so they can be used against Israel. And, of course, Iran is strengthening the power and rearming Hezbollah in Lebanon. Certainly Syria, at least in the past, has been going mobilizing in preparation for the coming war in the Near East. Well, I'm going to let Barry tell you what's going to happen. Barry, thank you so very much for being with us again.
As usual, my pleasure. Just to correct you, Olmert was finance minister. I'll go into his scandal, but he was certainly in public office, all right.
But what is his job? What's his job right now? What's his job right now?
He's prime minister.
Okay, go ahead.
And the roadblocks have not gone down yet. The army is fighting that. Nonetheless, what is her name from the CFR? Condoleezza Rice?
Condoleezza Rice, right.
Right. She publicly demanded that Olmert sweep away the roadblocks, and this was reported widely. Now, what that means, of course, is that she's working hand-in-hand with the Vatican, because it was after Olmert's meeting with the Pope that he returned to Israel, and he demanded that the roadblocks be removed. Now, of course, that is not a sane move. Nobody would allow the terrorists a free rein on Israel. And the fact that it's even being debated is surrealistic. These aren't real issues. But the army is going a little crazy on this and almost got some problems with this. So that's the latest there. But look, I started yesterday, and I'd like to continue with one subject, which I said is a farce.
All right, hold that subject, and we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Barry Samus. Go right ahead, Barry.
Okay. Now, that subject, of course, is the Golan, where suddenly Israel is negotiating away the Golan with Syria. Now, I reported yesterday that whenever the Golan comes out like this, it's to hide something else. Now, I recall it was November 99. The Rabin family had opened their mouth finally. The son, daughter, wife, they all demanded a reinvestigation of the Rabin murder. I was watching TV when Yuval Rabin said, if we don't reinvestigate, there'll be a lot more Chamishes in the near future. And indeed, he was right. The country is filled with so-called conspiratorial writers, which I've spawned. And a lot of them, by the way, are not so sane. And I've dealt with their kind for long enough. But he was right. And then Leah Rabin went on TV and said that Ofer Pinas, he was the member of Knesset who banned my book from the dais of the Knesset. He was too radical that the public should leave through Chamish's book. And I was watching this stuff. Now, suddenly, the Rabin assassination bursts wide open. All the family expressed their doubts. And it looks like, finally, there's going to be justice in the country. And then Ehud Barak declares that he's giving away the Golan Heights. Just like that. And the Rabin family disappears into the woodwork while Israel, of all political persuasions, fought to keep the Golan. And this is why when they do it again, well, odds are pretty good that they're covering something. Now, I think I know what they're covering, at least in its potential. Olmert can really open up this whole New World Order attack on Israel, because he's got two co-defendants. And these two co-defendants are up to their ears in mafia crimes. Now, co-defendant number one is Daniel Abraham. I've described him on numerous occasions. Now, I'm going to go through his worst crime. Something that eventually somebody is going to investigate, and that's the murder of Congressman Wayne Owens of Utah. Now, Daniel Abraham lent Congressman Owens his plane to fly to Tel Aviv, and he was dead a few hours later.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Barry Shamish. All right. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was started out talking, first of all, about the fact that there has been a lot of interest in Israel recently about the murder of Rabin, Yitzhak Rabin, and Barry had written about this many years ago, and the family now was calling for an investigation of the murder of the premier of Israel, and saying we've got to have a real good investigation, and suddenly then everybody's talking about the Golan Heights, and what that Barry is suggesting is this is simply one of those techniques that is used standard, whether it be in Israel or here in the United States, as a distraction to take people away from other things. In other words, the issue is not the Golan Heights, but taking people away from really important issues. And one of those is the fact that the Olmert, who's the prime minister today, is being actually investigated for financial misdealings with two men, one of them a man named David Abraham. And David Abraham, of course, was
Daniel Abraham.
Daniel was associated with the murder of an American congressman named Wayne Owen. So you pick up the story there.
Now, the other one, now this gets a little complicated, and it really depends on you accepting or refusing to accept the possibility that 9/11 is not the way we're told it was. Now, I spoke at the alternative 9/11 convention in New York, and I was a very different speaker. The speakers there were slamming Israel, but out of utter ignorance. They didn't know the country. They didn't know how it worked. There was one Jim Mars, and there was another Ralph Schoenham, and they were just slamming Israel, and not a word was the truth, because they don't know the country. They pretend they do, but they don't. And so I put in the facts that, yes, there is a real chance of involvement by those who run Israel. And again, to me, that's the Sabbateans, but it's certainly the peacemakers. All right, let's leave it at that. The Bolshevik Jews, Labor Zionism, the far left, the peacemakers. Now, the real problem is these people think it's the right wing. It's the real tough guys like Sharon that are running Israel. And I just explained to them that Sharon was always left wing. He was raised left wing. His party, Shlom Tzion, was left wing. He cut a deal with Kissinger in July of 74 to meld his party with Begin's Chirut party and to destroy the Chirut from within. This is who Sharon was. He was a plant in the right, and his job was to destroy the right. And there's no more Chirut anymore. And there's no more right anymore in Israel. You can't vote for the right. You have something called the Likud with 12 seats, run by a CFR stooge named Netanyahu, and that's all you got in that country. So that's what Sharon did. He destroyed the legitimate Zionism. He destroyed the good guys. And now we're all stuck with this middle-of-the-road version of Sabbateanism, no matter where we turn. Now, we're talking about, right now, someone named Frank Lowy, the second co-defendant. Frank Lowy owned the real estate that was the World Trade Center. Okay, that was him. He owned 425,000 square feet. Well, he leased it for 99 years, and we assumed that he wasn't going to see the end of that lease. But the fact is he owned for 99 years the shopping concourse of the World Trade Center. And when that World Trade Center went down, he profited mightily by it. And that name is a real problem because he's an Israeli. And no one seems to know that an Israeli owned the real estate, which is the World Trade Center. This is a major secret. Well, now that is not such a big secret. He's now being investigated along with the Prime Minister of Israel for graft and embezzlement. This investigation, it depends on Israel police. How much are they going to demand from Abraham and Lowy to produce? And that includes their financial records. Are they going to really look at the business of these guys? Because if they do, they could stumble on anything. Now, the reason I mentioned Lowy is that at this convention, I knew about Menachem Atzmon. In the late 1980s, the Likud party had two treasurers. One was Ehud Olmert, one was Menachem Atzmon. Both were indicted for embezzlement. Atzmon went to prison, Olmert didn't. He went in 96. When he got out, he got a real big payoff for keeping his mouth shut. He was given the security company, chairmanship of the security company, which watched over Newark and Logan airports on 9/11. The two airports where the planes came out of that crashed into World Trade Center, or the one that was supposed to. And we'll go into that in one second. That was Menachem Atzmon, Olmert's partner in the Likud party. How come Olmert's got two business partners, both so wrapped up in 9/11? Now, the real problem is the Jews won't accept that 9/11 might not have been just Arabs crashing into the building, that there might be a very different other story. Now, I know how to break that other story, and I'm amazed that no one else has thought of this. Building 7, this was my speech to the conference. Building 7 went down in a perfect controlled demolition at 5 in the afternoon of 9/11. In the shadows, in the smoking shadows of the two main towers, the 47-story building was pulled, as he called it, by Larry Silverstein. Now, it takes weeks to take a big building like that and set it up with the perfect combination of explosives to get it to go down straight. Well, that building was filled with explosives. And Silverstein pulled it. The reason it was full of explosives is that Flight 93 was supposed to hit the building, and it was felled over Pennsylvania, and Silverstein was stuck with a building full of explosives. Now you ask the big question, how did Silverstein know the building was full of explosives? You have to ask the question. What he said on PBS, The Rebuilding of America, it was in 2002, was that he had consultations with the fire department, and everyone agreed to pull the building. All right? Then the fire department knew the building was full of explosives. Somebody knew that building was full of explosives. And they knew that the explosion would be controlled. That put Silverstein into the crime. How did he know a thing like that? Assuming it wasn't the fire department, it was him. How did he know that? And this is what I spoke about. But now there's a real problem. I went to dinner that night in New York with two prominent right-wing activists, Charlie Bernhardt and Helen Friedman of the Americans for a Safe Israel. They would not accept that any Jews had anything to do with 9/11. And I told them about Menachem Atzmon, and Charlie said, so what? It's one coincidence. Well, now, with Frank Lowy, it's not one coincidence anymore. It's now two members, highly suspect members of the 9/11 gang, were business partners with Ehud Olmert. Now, you got to wonder how he became prime minister and why, and what he was up to. But this investigation, if it's real, could actually save Israel, if that's possible, and I'm not sure it is. Now, I have all these books on Lulu.com. The one you have to get is Bye Bye Gaza, and it explains why Gaza had to go. It explains the torture of the citizens of Gaza. It explains the ongoing tragedy in Israel. Gaza ruined the country. You go to lulu.com and type my name in search, Chamish, and you'll get to my books. That's Chamish. We got to look at something I put up at my website. Then we'll get back to the issue of Gaza. I put up a film. My webmaster was uncertain whether I should do it or not because I look so overweight. But I put a note and I said I lost the weight, and go to pictures at my website. Go to my website. It's www.TheBarryChamish website. The, and then BarryChamish website.com. And you will see me at Rabin's 10th anniversary memorial rally. You will see me handing out stickers and bulletins, and I'm facing 100,000 people who knew what would happen that night. Who knew what would happen to me? The far left of that city could have killed me. But there's a message in there. It's that you can actually stand up. The Jews have forgotten this. It's actually possible to face the mob and come out ahead. And I put that film up so you can see that this is what I actually did. Somebody filmed me at the rally, and there I am. Now, Dr. Stan?
Right, go ahead.
All right. We will now go to something very weird that happened also this 2 weeks ago, let's say. All of a sudden, there was great news on Arut Sheva, which is the Israel National News site, the only news site that normal people read anymore. There was a solution to the Gaza problem. The government had finally solved the Gaza problem. They were going to give the Gaza residents a whole new settlement in the Jordan Valley. Now, as soon as I read that, I said, what is that? From the pot to the fire. You can't set up new settlements now. The world right now is watching everything going on in Israel.
Okay, you hold that. Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Barry Chamish. All right, Barry is just saying that somebody suggested that the people who were forcibly removed from Gaza, the people who had their farms and their homes there, that had been there for generations, now they're going to give them a settlement in the Jordan Valley, which is in the Palestinian area. That doesn't even make sense.
It's not the Palestinian area, not at all. There was never so much as a Palestinian down the Jordan Valley.
But it is right now, isn't it? Isn't it, it considered the Jordan, the Palestinian area today?
Oh, no, it's Israeli.
It's Israeli. Okay, go ahead.
It's Israeli. They don't have that.
All right, go ahead.
And supposedly we're supposed to protect that with all our heart and soul since it's Israel's eastern border. I mean, there's no fooling with how important that is. But neither here nor there, everything goes back. Everything's up for grabs. That's the case with Israel. But this settlement, it didn't matter. Any settlement, you know, isn't going to work. So it looks like the government really cares about these refugees when, in fact, they knew they were giving them nothing. And this is on purpose. And this is what the Israelis don't understand. They're at war with their government. The government cannot abide by a successful Jewish state of Israel, a state that learns the Torah and is going back to its traditions. This government can't abide by that. It's against what they stand for. They believe that secularism in the extreme, that is the opposite of what the Torah says, is actually the real thing. Because their messiahs, they have two of them, Shabtai Tzvi and Jacob Frank, believe that, well, do not kill. Kill was great. As for your marital life, you're trading off with all your neighbors. Purim was the wife trading holiday of the Sabbateans. This, believe it or not, was supposed to be Israel. Israel was not supposed to be religious. And the settlements, which were posted there, not to succeed, but to actually take the first blows and protect Tel Aviv, turned into the liveliest, healthiest lifestyle in Israel. These were one of the few moral places you could go to, leave your door open, and expect honesty. Well, that could not be. And the campaign to destroy the settlements began with Oslo, with the Oslo Agreement. But right now, they actually, in Gush Katif, pulled them out of their homes with their hands in the air, put them on buses. It was the Nazis all over again. It was the same thing as the Nazis. Now, I wrote a book on how they did it. And they did it because the settlers are so damn naive, they can't see in front of their own noses. And I wrote about how all of the organizations that supposedly were helping them were not helping them. I wrote about their rabbis. There had been at least 20 rabbis killed in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria, since Oslo. Their greatest rabbis were knocked off by the Jewish government. Arabs may have pulled the trigger. It didn't matter. It was a policy to destroy the religious Jews, which is called the Oslo Accord or the roadblock. It's to destroy them. Unfortunately, it's going to end up destroying all of the country. But nonetheless...
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is basically talking about the mistreatment of the people who were in Gaza, the people who had been in that settlement for so many years, and really, of course, they've been forcibly removed, and now, of course, they're living in Israel, and they really don't have an income. They are having a hard place to find to live in, and Barry's pointing out there's an organized effort to murder the traditional Jewish rabbis, and, of course, they're being... As he said, the trigger may be pulled by the Arabs, but this is really the Sabbateans, the people who really run Israel today, are the ones who are behind this because they want to destroy those people who believe in the Torah and believe in the traditional Jewish religion. So pick the story up there.
Now I go to the death of Yuri Stern. Now Yuri Stern was, he died yesterday, by the way, age 58. What set a lot of people to thinking was an article by David Bedin in which he quoted Stern as saying his doctors couldn't find the source of his ailment. A couple of months ago, he started collapsing, and that he knew he wasn't well, but he didn't know from what. Uri Stern was murdered. I'm going to say that outright. Uri Stern was of the old style. He believed in the political system. He was no ally of mine. Okay, I met him, but he was no ally of mine. Uri Stern lived in Gush Katif, in Neve Dekalim. I gave a speech there, I don't know, a few days before it went down. I snuck into Gaza. I spoke to 100 people there. I warned them to get rid of the army right now. They're your enemies. I warned them to barricade their homes. But no, they believed in rabbis and miracles. And we'll talk about Rabbi Shlomo Avener, who told their children to pass out orange striped rags and to dance around soldiers, and they won't evacuate you because they realize you're the nicest people in the world. All this was happening, and nobody was speaking out but me. And I don't know why I was the only one speaking out. Uri Stern didn't do it. Uri Stern kept submitting laws and going to the high court and trying to put a stop to the evacuation. In the end, what Bedin writes is he died of Gush Katif. No, he didn't. He was too pesky. He knew too much. Now he was working for the survivors. He knew the government was torturing them. He was working for them, and that was a big mistake. I guess that's a mistake that killed him off. He died. I'm telling you, I think it was murder. And you know what? What David Bedin wrote, that his doctors could not trace the source of his ailment, pretty well lets me know that he was another in the long string of people who died in that country. Good people. I could be Uri Stern today in Israel. That's why I ran. It was getting too frightening. He died. And that's the latest story in Gaza. Now, I received a phone call a couple nights ago from my friend Baruch, a good guy. And he knows what they're doing to Israel. And he asked one question. He said, when Condoleezza Rice was in the country, where were the protesters? He said, for me, he said, right now nothing can be done, because if a woman who is behind the destruction of Israel can walk into that country with impunity and not worry about a protest from one protester, well, then the New World Order can do whatever it wants to Israel. In Israel, she's telling Olmert to lift the roadblocks. Well, what are you going to do? There's no one there to protest her. She can do whatever she wants.
And of course, those are the roadblocks that are keeping the terrorists out, and she wants to lift those so the terrorists and the suicide bombers can come in more easily.
Look, it's now reached the point where when there is protest, for instance, I helped organize a protest against Peres's 80th birthday party in Tel Aviv, and in the end, the women in green got us a spot a half a mile away from where it was, where there were no reporters and nobody saw us. There is no protest. I suppose it's all over. I suppose. But if there was, and I started to talk to you about this yesterday, and who's going to do the protesting? And I spoke about the terrible atrocity that were done to the Sephardic people in the early 50s.
And I think you should tell that story again here, because I think that's an important story.
These are the people who despise the labor Zionists, and so far, anyways, are not organized politically. The settlers, everything about them is now infiltrated. Bensi Lieberman admits that as Yeshua council head, he led them into the desert instead of Gush Katif. Itamar Ben-Gvir, people like Aryeh Eldad and Nadia Matar.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back in just a moment.
Oh.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Barry Sammis. Barry, go right ahead with your story.
Right. Ben Gvir again, he brings his gang into Gush Katif. There's a good protest being organized again by Nadia. They've got 2,000 there. It looks like they might have 20,000 by the time the troops arrive. It looks really hopeful. In he comes with his gang. Up goes the sign, Mohammed is a pig. And that's it. The world gets to see the Arabs against the Jews in Gush Katif. Nothing to do with the real story. Nothing to do. All their allies were working against them. But there's one group, I think, who so far haven't been infiltrated, and that's the Sfaradim. The Sfaradim despise the labor Zionists and have never voted for them. And the real reason is the kidnapping of the Yemenite children. There, about 4,500 of them were kidnapped, and the radiation of 108,000 Sephardi children, an entire generation, were given 35,000 times more gamma rays, X-rays, through their brains than is permitted. They're known in Israel as the ringworm children. You see them everywhere. You see Moroccan women with very, very loose hair. I used to think that if you were Moroccan, you just didn't have thick hair. Now it turns out they all got these radiation treatments, and all over Israel you see the women with their very, very stringy hair. That's them. What happened is I met Rabbi Meshulam. Now, his son, Avi, lives in Canada, and Arut Sheva did an interview with him. He said, because he didn't want to die of a natural disease. He said he'd had it with the Shabak. His father tried to open up the case of the 4,500 Yemenite children who disappeared in the early days of the state. They were taken from their parents' arms, told they were going to be put in the hospital overnight. Then the parents were informed they were dead. They were given an empty grave, and the children disappeared day after day after day. And he wanted to get to the bottom of this. Now, you can't get to the bottom of this because I went to his cell, and he blasted tape music. And I asked him, why don't you just unite all the parents with their biological children, and that's that. He turns up the tape, and he says, because most of them aren't alive. And he explains radiation experiments in the United States being done on prisoners, on the mentally retarded, on blacks.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling us about really one of the most horrible, horrible things. You've probably never heard of it before, but it was many years ago when there were about 4,500 Yemenite children who were actually taken by force from their parents there in Israel, and they were sent to the United States to be used in radiation experiments after the Second World War. It was exactly what was happening here, where they were using prisoners and blacks and radiation experiments, feeding our children, the mentally defective children, plutonium. But 4,500 Yemenite children literally taken by force from their children, told they were going to be from their parents, and never returned. And then there was over 100, 100 and something like 30,000 Sephardic children who were given radiation treatment, massive radiation treatment to their brains in the name of treating ringworm. These are stories you're never going to hear elsewhere. But Barry's documented them. So you pick up the story there, Barry.
Well, that's, again, get my book, Shriptites Fee, Labor Zionism and the Holocaust. Once again, you go to Lulu, L-U-L-U.com. You write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, and it'll take you there. And you get the whole story of the radiation. They made, imagine it's 1952, and you're a Sephardic family living in Israel. Imagine hearing about these disappearances. Imagine your children coming home from school with their hair all cut off and felt pen markings all over their head. It was a nightmare for those people. And they have never forgiven labor. And they all know about the Yemenite children. Every Yemenite knows about it. Everyone knows about it. The ringworm experiments are known. There are people who hate the labor Zionists. I'm not even going to use the N word to describe what it means to irradiate 108,000 Sephardic children. But the film, The Ringworm Children, was shown on Israeli TV, Channel 10, a couple years ago, a few years ago. I wrote about the national reaction, and then the nation decided to forget. Because if we thought about what our leaders did and what they're doing to us now, we wouldn't be able to be patriotic. Now it turns out that it's true. Ynet published a poll. We discovered that 80% of Israelis now believe that every politician is thoroughly corrupt. Now, 20% is what you'd expect of people who can't change their minds. And who did they choose as the least a corrupted politician? At 5%, Avigdor Lieberman. Avigdor Lieberman met with Condoleezza Rice. At the end of the meeting, he told everyone, he suggested to her that we invite 30,000 NATO soldiers to take over guarding the Gaza Strip. Out goes the IDF, in goes NATO, in goes those troops from southern Italy. That is the Spanish initiative. That is what the Pope wanted Olmert to press in Israel. Now Lieberman's doing the pressing, and people think he's the least corrupt of the politicians. He's in with the whole mafia. Well, that's basically, by the way, what happened in the last week. There's all kinds of fun stuff, you know, like the Americans sending an aircraft carrier to the Persian Gulf. You don't just send the carrier, you send a whole fleet. You guard an aircraft carrier. It costs billions to run a whole fleet. It's going to the Persian Gulf. It'll be there in about a month.
That'll be the John Stennis carrier strike force, right?
Indeed. And there you go. We now have the set pieces in place for a simply awful, awful attack on Israel.
Now,
you can call it an attack on Iran if you're crazy enough. But when Iran gets hit, Israel gets hit. And the people in Israel, you know, this is something I try to explain. When people think about the Holocaust, they think about films they've seen with these happy people explaining the toughest time in their lives. These were not happy people. I knew them. I grew up around them. These were extremely, extremely unhappy people, very moody. All their family had been killed. They don't just miss them, they'll never see them again. And when this happens to Israel, when Israel gets set up, the results are going to be even worse than the Europeans, if you can believe it, because the Israelis at least knew what was to be free for a while. They're not going to take this upcoming missile war very well at all.
And because you're concerned then that Iran will, if they are attacked, they will retaliate on Israel by, of course, firing their missiles, which really would be able to reach Israel quite readily.
Why bother with them? They can use Hezbollah. They're not short allies. And they're pumping a lot of weapons to Hezbollah. Israel will be very badly hurt if Iran is hurt. And quite frankly, the Iranian leader is acting like he wants this war. What was he doing in South America, popping from country to country and getting them all to shout anti-American slogans for?
I don't think most Americans know that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has just been down in Nicaragua meeting with his good friend Ortega. He's a communist, and certainly Chavez, and then it was Ecuador where they just brought a Marxist into power. So Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was in all of those countries just this last week. What was he doing, you know, in South America? Well, he's lining up those countries against
America.
Spreading
his alliance.
Right.
And they could be very problematic for the States, quite frankly. If we get ourselves this kind of world war, the United States will be banned from these countries at a minimum. Look, everybody right now is setting up an alliance. What was Olmert doing in China? It's not as if China likes to invite the Israeli prime minister to visit there. What was he doing there? And again, I would suggest that exploring another alliance is a possibility. Israel would be in much better hands aligning itself with China than letting the CFR run its life anymore. Look, when I started the show, I started on the business of 9/11. And a lot of this material that I'm given may paint Israel in not the best way. You know what? These people have to be stopped now or never. If not now, when? They have to get out of our lives, these labor Zionists, or what you call leftists, or what you call peacemakers. They're destroying us. The information I give about them is to tell you that the Israeli people didn't deserve them. It's that simple. We got screwed. All of us got screwed. But they're going to try to make another Holocaust. And they have set up Israel so that, as my friend from Israel, Baruch, tells me, the army is thoroughly emasculated. It can no longer protect anything. We're not Israelis anymore. They did that in 12 years. They changed the Israeli personality. This is not a country which will fight to the last man to protect his land. It's not like that. They'd rather surrender. Oh, boy.
Well, I don't think they're going to get a chance to surrender the way things are going now. I think it's only a matter of time before the United States is engaged in a war with Iran, and with that will come a retaliation against not only our forces there in the Middle East, but against Israel as well. And well, I think it's a frightening thing to think that our leaders have manipulated this whole thing, and the American people will honestly think, well, we had to do that. Gee, if we didn't take Iran out, why they'd be attacking Israel. So we're going to try to save Israel by attacking Iran, and in the process, I think we're going to destroy Israel.
I don't know. You lost me on that one. All I know is that the people in charge of the world are the same people I've been saying for the last 12 years. In America, it's the Council on Foreign Relations, diplomatic headquarters. In Europe, it's the Vatican. That is who is throwing Israel away. Now, I want to say one last little goodbye to a friend of mine, Grant Livingston. We were at the Clinton-Rabin press conference, and we were watching this horrible display where the only people allowed to ask questions were Clinton's paid press corps. We had a Mary Thomas asking, how was the trip? Did you enjoy yourself? And there was this journalist from Israel in front of us, Emmanuel Rosen. Grant Livingston, and by the way, he doesn't have two arms, he had a prosthetic in one arm, pushed away Emmanuel Rosen and said to Clinton, do you know the penalty for giving away God's land? And Clinton turned really, really red. He was not expecting that question. He died last month in Winnipeg. And I thought I'd just remember a little event that tells what I was doing when I lived in Israel.
Well, Gary, you've been fighting as hard as you could for a good long while, trying to preserve a land that you love. And the great tragedy is, I'm sure, absolutely right. They have destroyed all of the opposition in Israel. They've, they've infiltrated all of the conservative movements there, the traditional movements, and killed many of the rabbis who ordinarily would be leading this. But this is what they've done in America as well. There is no effective organization here in the United States today. They've infiltrated all of our conservative and our Christian organizations. And right now, of course, the only opposition is controlled by the other side. In other words, we see the anti-war movement, but it's all being, most of it being manipulated by the very people who are pushing the war. And the great tragedy is the average American really doesn't understand what's going on. They're playing games with our minds. They're playing games with the minds of the Jewish people, giving this idea of, well, there's nothing that can be done. It's all a fait accompli. And they're doing the same thing with the American people. Oh, there's just nothing can be done. A great deal can be done. If there wasn't a great deal that could be done, they wouldn't be working so hard to discourage the Israeli people from standing up for their country, or discourage the Americans from standing up for their country.
Well, I've got this issue of the Golan. You know, it was so serious the day it came out, and I knew it was nothing. And then I read in Haaretz a whole piece about the secret negotiations, and we find out that it's from the Washington Institute of Near East Peace. That's Martin Indyk's scam of a think tank. That's where Ehud Barak quit politics, went there for 5 months, ended up a millionaire somehow. It is behind this Oslo 100%. They're one of the partners. The other partner is the Turks. And the Turks, I'm not going to go in and explain that Shabtai Tzvi was Turkish, and a Turkish sect called the Donma took on his religion, and Atatürk and his Young Turks took over the republic, and these Sabbateans are actually running it, and that's why Turkey has maintained ties with Israel, the only Islamic state to do so over the years. In short, there's one other business that has to be addressed, and that's that these Turks are all part of the upcoming war. And this is just not understood for some reason. The Turks, if Iraq falls, the Kurds are going to declare their own state. And if that happens, the Turks come in. The Turks won't allow an independent Kurdish state. They think, at least we're told, who knows if this is what they really think, but at least we're told that this gives them tremendous heartaches at night, imagining their own Kurds rising up and demanding independence, and they will attack Kurdistan. So we've got them supposedly bringing Israelis and Syrians together so that lucky old Israel gets to give back the Golan Heights. Believe it or not, that's the prize. In Haaretz, it's like a really good thing. But then I read that these talks ended in 2005. I said, well, if they've ended in 2005, why are they being brought up? And I'm telling you, they're being brought up because of what I said. There's something about Olmert's police interrogation that's driving people crazy. Now, remember something important. Sharon is dead because of Peres and Olmert. Now, I've done this on your show enough. We've gone through the drinking of the tea with Peres and the bodyguard Yoram Rubin, the one who killed Rabin, brings him into the hospital and so on and so forth.
And that was the same fellow who took Sharon to the hospital. It was with Sharon, isn't that
yes,
right?
Yes, Yoram Rubin murdered Rabin. He's part of the Peres gang. But in short, there are two elements out there who want Olmert to continue being the weakling he is. That's one side of it. But there's an element that really wants him dead because he would take over as prime minister, and that's Shimon Peres. And I've been saying this, that it's a matter of time before they get Olmert on something big, because Peres is one step away from being prime minister of Israel, and the only person in his way is Olmert. And it's Peres' way to get rid of people who stand in his way. The business with Daniel Abraham is Peres' co-mafia crook. Abraham is a member of the Peres Peace Center, and as I told you, Abraham was also the business manager of Wayne Owens, who died on December 18th of the year 2002, opposite the Tel Aviv Hilton. That was Peres' gang who killed him off.
And that was
I gave the scandal in Salt Lake City. This was only 3 months ago. And I went on TV in Salt Lake City, and I said, your congressman was murdered in Tel Aviv. He didn't just die taking a walk opposite the Tel Aviv Hilton. And I explained the ties that Wayne Owens had with with laundered money and U.S. aid and desalinization plants. And I gave his last day alive, where he's running around looking for Palestinian moderates. Sari Hanousbi was one of them, that were going to replace Arafat. He wanted Arafat out. He was now caught up in the Gunasar scandal. Stephen Cohen, This is too tricky. Stephen Cohen, very quickly, Dina Tsar was the deputy head of the Shabak. He opened a bank account for Yasser Arafat, for Arafat to stick over $300 million of stolen money into that bank account. And he got $10 million for doing that. His partner, Osrat Lev, had a twinge of conscience, went to Maariv, told the whole story, and the biggest scandal that ever hit Israel was blasted on the front pages. This thing opened up everything, including the Rabin assassination. But there was something that really connected Wayne Owens to this. He opened a lot of straw companies for Arafat. And the CEO of many of them was Stephen Cohen, one of the two business managers of Wayne Owens' Middle Eastern economic sites. This scandal was going to bring in Wayne Owens if it were investigated by serious people.
Hold that off right there. All right, pick up the story there, Barry. So, they had to do away with Owens then, Congressman Wayne Owens, to prevent the scandal from breaking?
No, to prevent to keep Arafat on.
All right, fine.
Wayne Owens was going to be connected with all of this graft and embezzlement and just general stealing for the Palestinian people. He was going to be tied up. He got scared. He wanted a change. That change would have gotten rid of the Candyman. Arafat had to be kept alive. There are too many people making a fortune off him. Shimon Peres is number one amongst them. The deal was very simple. Owen said no more to this crime. We're replacing Arafat. He was killed in Tel Aviv. And Peres kept his partner Yasser Arafat alive. This is all my book, Shabtai Tzvili, Zionism in the Holocaust. Especially if you're Mormon, read that book. It's at lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. I can only say that in following all this crime, no one has ever said I was wrong. Okay, this is the problem with me. They're shutting me up. People say I'm crazy. I got one that who signs websites in my name saying I'm a Nazi. I've got this Daniel Pipes of the CFR slamming me every chance he gets. I've got terrible opposition. Terrible. But no one has ever said I'm wrong. Okay? Every word you just said is substantiated.
Well,
hope that helps.
Anyway, I appreciate you so much for being with us again, Barry. It's always really a stimulating and exciting time to have you with us. And I know how deeply you feel about what's going on over there in Israel today. And of course, really, of course, the betrayal of Israel, really, in many respects, starts right with our own Council on Foreign Relations. And I really believe, in many respects, that Israel, you know, as everybody wants to think that Israel dominates the United States, it is this secret organization here that dominates Israel and is betraying Israel. And
America is not even resupplying Israel with arms. They're setting Israel up to lose the next war. The worst ally in the face of the earth that Israel could ever have is the United States. And if you don't understand why, you haven't read my books.
All right, fine. Once again, where can they get the books?
Well, you go to lulu.com. Now, you can also write me, and I will send you them autographed, but you have to pay the Canadian postage.
Go ahead.
I just added $12. Write me at Chamish, Chamish, at Netvision, netvision.net, net.il, Chamish at netvision.net.il, and you'll pay a lot more. Lulu's cheaper.
All right, fine. Just one more time. Get that address out, and we'll let you go.
Lulu.com.
All right,
write
fine.
Write my name in search, and thebarrychamishwebsite.com.
God bless. Thanks very much, Barry.
Thank you again, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. It's always a pleasure having Barry here because he really got such a tremendous knowledge of what's going on in Israel. But the thing is, of course, what is happening in Israel is a reflection of the power structure that controls the United States that hates Israel. Why? Why? Because, of course, they hate God's people. And certainly God has a covenant with the Jewish people, those that really are Jewish, that are in Israel, and Of course, he has a covenant with the American people, too, but we've turned our back on the covenant, just as so many of the Jews have turned their back on their covenant. And this is why I fear for the future of Israel, but I fear for the future of our country as well. You need to understand who really runs America. And to do that, of course, you get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the video, the audio tape, or the DVD. It's a good story. It's accurate. I would stake my life on it. Then, of course, for other information, my August, September, October, November, and December Radio Liberty letters are available at www.radioliberty.com. Pull down those letters, copy those letters, study those letters, evaluate it. Is it really true? And if you want the documentation on anything we've said, we have it all. There really is a secret government that runs America and makes mockery of the of this so-called two-party system. You need, of course, to get the new book we're carrying called Satanic Crimes. Goes into the background of Skull and Bones and the Bohemian Grove and the Bilderbergers and their connection, of course, with Frank satanic activities. This is not imaginary. It's really very real. You want to get our pamphlets called The Occult Hierarchy. They're three pamphlets. You can get them all three of them together. The compilation of our newsletters in the past, but we've put them and compiled them into pamphlets, and one of the pamphlets was really written by Dr. Cuddy. Fascinating material as you begin to see how it all works together. Only by understanding the past can you understand what's going on today. And the plan to expand the war in the Middle East. Now you say, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, we're already in a terrible mess in Iraq. We ought to just get out and stop this. You don't understand. What is happening in the Middle East was planned that way. They would never allow the generals to fight the war they wanted to. They would never give them enough troops. They would never allow them to cut off the funding. It's Vietnam all over again. We were never allowed to win the war in Vietnam. In fact, all during the Vietnam War, we were funding the people who were funding the people who were killing our boys. And, of course, in Pakistan today, why the Taliban are being organized, they're being armed, they're being financed. And then they move across the border into Afghanistan, where they kill our boys, and then they go back into Pakistan. Who's arming and training and funding the Taliban? Why, the Pakistani intelligence, ISI. And who's funding Pakistani intelligence? Why, the American CIA and the American government, which gives $600 million to Pakistan, because if we didn't give them that money, they might become our enemies. Why, the radicals might take over the country. And that is exactly what they said during Vietnam. Why, we couldn't attack North Vietnam. Why that might get us into a war with Russia or with China. Oh, we couldn't try to win the war. And 58,000 American boys died for nothing. And tragically, what you're seeing in Iraq and Afghanistan today is deja vu all over again. You need to get, of course, our four tape set on Vietnam. You need to get certainly our four tapes out on the men we left behind in Vietnam, the men we abandoned. You need to get the book Kiss the Boys Goodbye about the men we abandoned, the CIA involvement of the drug trade, a book that's been suppressed for a long time. We have them good condition secondhand books for a long suppressed book. So much available from Radio Liberty. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.